Welcome to Season 3 of Love in Context. This season, we're exploring the life of Jesus, step by step, and uncovering what his story teaches us about loving God and others. Here on Love in Context, we're all about having real conversations about how to live out that love in practical, everyday ways, and understanding the Bible in its full context. We're so glad you're here. Let's dive into Season 3 of Love and Context. Welcome back to the Love and Context podcast. The Love and Context podcast.
I feel like you've sang that one already.
I have. Yeah. It's like a reoccurring theme in my head. Also, I tend to, I have songs that I sing about just like everything. I'll be like, I'm going to make some dinner. Gonna make some dinner. People are watching and they're like, I wish he hadn't danced. I really wish that hadn't happened. I really, really wish that hadn't happened. So we are Love and Context Podcast. I'm Ben. This is Spencer. Mm-hmm. And we are in Season 3. We're talking about the life of Jesus.
Yes.
Last week we talked about Jesus going through and cleansing the temple, which was also on the heels of him raising Lazarus from the dead.
Yep.
So then he goes into the temple and he says, hey, stop it.
Pretty much.
Stop it. You know, the house is supposed to be a place where everybody's welcome and everybody's being invited in. And instead, all you're doing is selling a bunch of stuff and ripping people off. Mm-hmm. Knock it off.
And we have a story today that is similar.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, we planned these out. Sometimes we think we know how long we're going to take and we're wrong.
Yeah.
So then this week and next week, we're going to be talking about how Jesus is then going to, from the cleansing of the temple, have these conversations and really confront leadership and different perspectives on what they think Messiah should be and what they think God should be doing.
Yeah.
First thing we're going to talk about, there's a place in the book of Matthew, it's chapter 21. There's a story called the Parable of the Talents. And Jesus is going to be telling them this parable in response to them asking by whose authority he's going and doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I think you've got that up, right?
All right. So here we go. Now listen to another story. A certain landowner planted a vineyard, built a wall around it, and dug a pit for pressing grape juice, and built a lookout tower. Then he leased the vineyard to tenant farmers who moved and moved to another country. At this time of the grape harvest, he sent his servants to collect their share of the crop. Or his share of the crop. But the farmer grabbed his servants, beat one, killed one, and stoned another. So the landowner sent a larger group of servants to collect them, but the results were the same. Finally, the owner sent his son, thinking, surely they will respect my son. But the tenant farmers saw his son coming, and they said to one another, here comes the heir of the estate. Come on, let's kill him and get the estate for ourselves. So they grabbed him, drug him out of the vineyard, and murdered him. When the owner of the vineyard returned, Jesus asked, what do you think he will do to the farmers? Religious leaders replied, he will put the wicked men to a horrible death and lease the vineyard to others to give him his share of each crop and after each harvest. Jesus asked him, didn't you ever read this in the scriptures? A stone that the builder rejected will become the cornerstone. This is what the Lord is doing, and it is a wonderful to see. I tell you, the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to nations that will produce proper fruit. You're ready to jump in. I got a few more verses, man. Anyone who stumbles over the stone wall, he threw me off. He threw off my groove.
Sorry.
Anyone who stumbles over that stone will be broken into pieces, and it will crush anyone it falls on. When the leading priests and Pharisees heard this parable, they realized that he was telling the story against them, and they were the wicked farmers. They wanted to arrest Jesus, but they were afraid of the crowds and who considered Jesus to be a prophet.
All right. So first off, let's just point out the hilarious part about this is that Jesus tells them the story. And he's like, what do you think that the farm owner should do? Uh-huh. And they're like thinking Rome, right? Uh-huh. They're like,
You should kick them out and put people in charge that are better. And then he's like, oh, dang it, they're talking about us. Right?
They're like, that backfired.
Yeah. So want to come back and touch on a few references to this. One of them is from Isaiah 5. It's the Song of the Vineyard. So I just want to kind of read this because this is kind of the setting of what's going to be talked about here. I will sing for the one I love, a song about his vineyard. My loved one has a vineyard on a fertile hillside. He dug it up and cleared it of stones and planted it with the choicest. Choiciest vines. He built a watchtower in it to cut out a wine press as well. Then he looked for a crop of good grapes, but it yielded only bad fruit. Now you dwellers in Jerusalem and people of Judah, judge between me and my vineyard. What more could have been done for my vineyard than I have done for it? When I looked for good grapes, why did it yield only bad? Now I will tell you what I'm going to do with my vineyard. I will take away its hedge. It will be destroyed. I will break down its wall and it will be trampled. Okay. So then the other one that's going to be referenced is Psalm 118. And I'm not going to go through the whole psalm. I'm just going to kind of read you a few highlights out of that because these people are very familiar with what Jesus is pulling in. So it starts, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His love endures forever. Let Israel say, his love endures forever. Let the house of Aaron say, let his love endures forever. Yeah. Let those who fear the Lord say, his love endures forever. Catching a theme here, right? When hard-pressed, I cried to the Lord. He brought me into a spacious place. It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in humans. It's better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in princes. All the nations surround me, but in the name of the Lord, I cut them down. They surrounded me on every side, but in the name of the Lord, I cut them down. Coming down here to this portion, I will give thanks for you answered me. You have become my salvation. The stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. The Lord has done this, and it is marvelous in our eyes. The Lord has done it this very day. Let us rejoice and be glad. Lord, save us. Lord, grant us success. Now, why is that important? Because they've actually been crying this when Jesus came in. Hoshana, right? Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. For the house of the Lord, we bless you. The Lord is God, for he has made his light shine upon you. So if you remember from the triumphal entry just a few weeks ago, they were crying these verses when he was coming in. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, right? And now Jesus is taking that same psalm and reminding them, is like, hey, this king, this kingly figure is saying, everybody's against me, but it's better to trust in God than to trust in people. It's better to trust in God than to trust in the powers around you. Now, who's he talking to? He's talking to them. Like, what are they trusting in? They're trusting in their institutions. They're trusting in their wealth, their power, like whatever it is, right? He says, no, you need to trust in God. And God's going to do it all. But the very thing that you're rejecting is actually going to be the cornerstone of new creation, right? The very thing that you're rejecting is actually going to be the cornerstone of everything that comes up.
Well, and then you also, in the story, you have the landowner sending people to help the farmers.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and oftentimes we don't interpret it that way because, like, no, they were going to correct, right?
Yeah.
Well, often that's what Jesus does in our life with sin, right? He comes in and he corrects that. And so, but you have the landowner being like, hey, they're doing this, go and correct this.
Yeah.
Like, help them.
Yep.
The landowner wasn't there to kick those farm tenants out. He's like, just go correct that.
Yeah.
And then the tenants were like, okay, cool. We're going to kill him too. And we're going to kill him.
Yeah.
And we're going to kill him. Right. And so you have the story of the landowner, in this case, God, being like, I'm sending someone to help you.
Yeah.
I'm sending someone to be there for you and you're pushing them away.
And coming back to this Isaiah, he says, I did everything I could. I'm done. I've done so much. Now in this parable, like, the leaders understand at the end, but the landowner is obviously God, right? The servants who keep coming to address the farmers, these are prophets, because what are prophets supposed to do? They're supposed to speak truth to power. Right, they're supposed to be a guideline, pulling the Israel's kings back, the Israel's leadership back to who they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right, the priesthood is supposed to every day help you ritualistically get into a rhythm of, like, serving God and following God and worshiping God. But the prophets are when you get out of line, they say, "Hey guys, let's go back to where we're supposed to be." And they also speak that to the priests.
Yeah,
right, because that's what's happening, and. And he's like, you didn't like the prophets, you killed them. So I sent more prophets and you killed them. Jerusalem, who kills its prophets. Remember, we read a couple weeks ago. And he's like, Then the son came and you're like, oh, you know, if we kill him, you know what the owner's going to want to do? Give us more land.
Yeah.
No. You're completely, he's been trying to bring you back. He's bringing you back. And you very much, they said it themselves. They're like, he's going to kick out the people and, mm-hmm. and build. By the way, this is not, by the way, supersessionism. Because people will take this and they'll be like, well, that's because the Gentile church is going to supplant the Israel church. No.
Nope,
faithful followers are going to replace the ones who are not being faithful.
Yeah.
And because if you remember, in the book of Acts, the church actually starts with a bunch of Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And they go and they spread out and they start growing in number with a bunch of Jews.
Yeah.
So this is not supersessionism. This is saying that God is creating this new creation, the cornerstone of which is going to be Jesus himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's rejected, but he's actually going to be the foundation of everything that's coming after.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of ways, he's the foundation of everything that came before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you're going to be pushed out.
Yeah.
And like, yeah.
And it's now this is really important because like we talked about last week, he's come through and this court of the Gentiles where they're supposed to be a kingdom of priests to the all nations has become commercialized. It's become about transactions. It's no longer representing like actual worship and actual ritual and actual mm-hmm. Following of God.
Yeah.
It's now a place of commerce.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer a beacon of hope to the world.
Yeah.
And he's like, listen, that's it. That's done. It's time to be a beacon of hope to the world again.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Let's zoom. Can we zoom in on Jesus's question to the
yes.
Pharisees here? So, by the way, just side note for everybody. I'm pretty sure I drive Ben nuts when we do this because Ben has like notes. He's like, we're going to talk through this, 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 and I don't have anything. And I'm just like, oh, let's talk about this now.
Yeah.
But you have this question. So Jesus, what do you think, so when the owner returns of the vineyard returns, what do you think he will do to those farmers? Now, this question, you're like, okay, this is really simple, but really the Pharisees are left in a bind,
mm-hmm.
right? Because one, they don't realize that Jesus is relating the farmers to them yet. So,
correct.
So if they answer, he needs to kill the farmers,
mm-hmm.
Jesus is like, okay, you know, you're the farmers, right?
Yeah.
Right. And if he answers, well, he's just not going to do anything. He's just going to show mercy or kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jesus could answer, well, what about your son
yeah.
and all the atrocities that these farmers have
yeah.
committed? Either way, it points back to either the Pharisees and the yeah. atrocities they've committed in Jerusalem right now, or the Pharisees just being like, oh no, kill him, take him out, which would signify that they now see themselves as evil.
Right.
Or at least know Jesus sees them that way.
One of the other things that I see in this story too, when he's having this conversation with them, because I'm always told that the God of the Old Testament is a God of fire and brimstone,
mm-hmm.
right? And obviously in our podcast, we disagree with that.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that Jesus is the representation of who the Father is, mm-hmm. like made flesh, mm-hmm. right? And you ask yourself, you're like, if you're reading the story, I don't know if you when you've read it, sometimes you're like, okay, they killed the last people. Why would you send more people?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like in my head, I send somebody, they kill them. I'm like, oh, let's send more people. And then if they kill those people, I'm definitely not like, hey, why don't I send my son? Like does that make, and so like, what is, if this is God, if this is, he's continuing to come and he's showing mercy. Like, this isn't painting a God who's ready to smite you the second you mess up.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually a God who's incredibly patient and probably lavishly.
If we, yeah.
Graceful.
Yeah. If we owned a vineyard, we sent somebody to deal with a situation, they killed them, we're probably calling the cops
yep.
or
getting the SWAT in there.
Yeah. We're
FBI, doing, call Sierra 117, which is like, Master Chief, by the way.
Yeah. we're going to call someone who has the authority to go in and forcefully handle this situation.
Right.
Right. Because it's like, hey, I just sent an employee to over here to help clean this mess up.
Yeah.
And the other people who are renting our space killed him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, in modern days, that's a 911 call of like, hey, this yeah. just happened.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we would have to be, from an earthly perspective, we would have to be idiots to be like, okay, well, they killed one staff person. Let me just send another. Okay, yeah. Killed another. Oh, let me just send my son. See if that makes a difference.
Yeah.
Right? Just to put that in perspective.
Now, why are they killing these people? It's because they're not wanting to give the landowner exactly what the land is supposed to produce, mm-hmm. which is good fruit, mm-hmm. right? Now, all throughout the Bible, good fruit is going to be connected with living the kingdom life,
yeah.
right? To go back to Matthew 5, the kingdom yeah. of God looks like this, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to know them by their good or bad fruit,
yeah.
right? I think it's interesting that right after this story, and I just went to the wrong place in the Bible, but give me one second here. He's going to tell a parable, but the next one is he's going to be talking to a Pharisee in 22:15. And I just want to connect this to what we're talking about here. Then the Pharisees went out and laid their plans to trap him in his words. So he's been talking to religious leaders. Now he's talking to Pharisees, right? They sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians, which, by the way, is really weird that the Pharisees and Herodians are working together. Mm-hmm. Go back to our podcast where we talked about that.
They don't like each other.
They don't like each other. Teacher, they said, we know that you are a man of integrity and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. You aren't swayed by others because you pay no attention to who they are. By the way, if anybody ever says that to you, they're definitely getting ready to drop a bomb, mm-hmm. right? Now tell us then, what is your opinion? Is it right to pay the imperial tax to Caesar or not? But Jesus, knowing their evil intent, said, you hypocrites, why are you trying to trap me? Show me the coin used to pay for paying the tax. They brought him a denarius, and he asked them, whose image is on this and whose inscription? Caesar's, they replied. Then he replied to them, so give back to Caesar what is Caesar's, and give to God what is God's. When they heard this, they were amazed, so they left him and went away. What's going to happen in this section, in these conversations, is different religious leaders, different avenues of Judaism are going to come and try to confront Jesus and try to trap him and try to mm-hmm. get him caught up in his words. Mm-hmm. So in the problem where the parable of the tenants, the people who are in charge of the land are not giving what's supposed to be, which is the good works, right? Yeah. It's the life of righteousness, the kingdom of priests. Yeah. So Jesus is then still in the temple, and they come up and they say, we got one for you. Mm-hmm. They're like, "Who should we pay taxes to Caesar or not?" Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is, if you say you're not supposed to pay taxes to Caesar, then Rome's going to come after you. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to say you should pay taxes to Caesar, the Pharisees are going to come after you and talk to you about that you're bowing to man over God. And the zealots are going to be frustrated with you siding with like paying taxes to mm-hmm. Rome. You know, they're like, how could you betray your people? Now, if you know anything about, if you read in Torah, you're not actually supposed to have mm-hmm. a Roman coin in the Temple Mount. Mm-hmm. So Jesus says, hand me a coin and take out a coin and let's take a look at it. So the person who pulls out the coin has already told Jesus what they think, mm-hmm. right? They've pulled out the temple or the non-temple coin in the temple. They've already told you what they think, where their allegiance lies.
Yeah.
So first of all, masterclass by Jesus. Mm-hmm. He's already uncovered them and what they're about to do. Mm-hmm. And then he says, now, whose inscription, whose image is on this silver? Mm-hmm. Whose image?
So he takes it a step further, right?
Yeah.
He's like, okay, you have that coin now. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
Like, well, here's Caesar's face.
Yeah.
And this, I think, highlights the grace of Jesus, though, in this moment, because mm-hmm. Jesus could have gone on a tirade of like, you hypocrites, and like talking about how like only the temple coin is allowed in here. Foreign currency is not allowed in the temple, all this stuff. And instead, he says, so give to Caesar what is Caesar and give to God what is God's.
Now, it feels like there's something in the image, mm-hmm. something in the book of Genesis that talks about mankind being in the image of somebody. Mm-hmm. Talks about mankind being made in the image of God. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus says, likening back to the prophets and Micah and many others,
yeah.
says, you think that the money matters. If Caesar wants his money, he can have his money, but don't you dare give him what belongs to God, which is you. Mm-hmm. You remember? You're leasing out a space.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be producing fruit. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to be sending it out to the nations for everybody to enjoy. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to be a kingdom of priests to the world. Mm-hmm. Don't you dare give Caesar what belongs to God, mm-hmm. which is your service, it's your life, it's your good works, it's your shining the light into the world, right? Mm-hmm. Don't you dare give Caesar that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't care about your gold. Mm-hmm. By the way, church, God doesn't care about your money. Mm-hmm. Tithing is not about your money. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need it. The guy literally spoke the world into existence. You think he needs your $20?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But we need to stock that espresso stand.
But what but what he does want is your heart.
Yeah.
He wants your heart, and he wants you to go and bring the kingdom of God wherever you go, mm-hmm. to become a kingdom of priests that are mediating between heaven and earth, that are bringing heaven to earth, that are bringing kingdom principles around, right?
And
this is who we're supposed to be.
And money can be a tool that can be used for that, right? Like don't hear, like, please don't mishear us and say, okay, Ben and Spencer said we don't need money. I was like, well, no, like, in the world we live in today, like, we need money to survive, like, to pay rent,
right,
to buy food, to take, I mean, to physically take care of ourselves, right?
Yeah.
But what we're saying is we do not want to take money and elevate that above who God called us to be.
Right.
Right? And that's what Jesus is getting at. He's saying, okay, look, you have foreign currency here.
Yeah.
He's showing that.
Yep.
And he's actually having them show everybody in a temple. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you have that here. You've already showed us where your value is.
Yeah.
You've already shown us that this is what's most important to you.
Yeah.
And so then he's saying, and then he just kind of turns back around. He's like, what about God?
Yeah.
What about him?
What are you doing with what God gave you?
Yeah.
Are you actually putting that into practice? Are you actually implementing that or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was having a conversation with a friend the other day, and it was along one of these things. So, because Jesus is having conversations with these religious leaders, mm-hmm. and these people who think that they know what's going on in the kingdom of God, which, by the way, we've never been in danger of being,
mm-hmm.
right? Being the religious leader that's closed-minded to what God's actually doing, or thinking that our way is right and nobody else could possibly do anything other different way.
There is not a single person who's had this experience with God where God has been like, hey, or where you've been like, hey, I believe in God. This is how everything's going to work out. Here's my 37-step plan to get through my life so then I can be in eternity with Jesus. And then God upheavals that about a third of the way through step one.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's never happened to anybody.
The reality is the only one who gets to upend those plans is God,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
But we were having a conversation. I said, you know, I think a lot of times, and it's something we have to remind ourselves when we are preaching, when we're teaching, when we're conversing with each other, and when we're reading the Bible, we read the Bible, and we read these stories where Jesus is talking to people, and we're like, yeah, I'm the outcast, I'm the downtrodden. If you grew up in church, you're probably the Pharisee.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably the Sadducee. You're probably the religious leader. Like, you probably need to listen to what he's saying to them,
mm-hmm.
and let it prick your heart.
Uh-huh.
Like, I know that that's the case for me because, like, I have these ideas of, like, I'm like, well, I know how God works.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, do you? Do you know how I work? Right? And a lot of time, and I was like, you know, am I in danger of with what God has, like, because it's a huge honor. And a huge privilege to grow up in a church that worships God, mm-hmm. or grow up in a family that worships God. But at the same time, like, sometimes we mix tradition with what God actually teaches.
Yeah.
And traditions don't necessarily always translate like what the called out life is supposed to be.
Yep.
Right. So one of the things I would just encourage listeners is, if you are a person who's grown up in the church, when you read these stories, just pause and be like, if this is me, what might this mean for me?
Yeah.
Right. When you look at this, you're like, am I actually bringing things that don't belong into God's temple?
Yeah.
Right. Am I asking questions to try to trap Jesus into doing what I want him to do?
Uh-huh.
Or am I actually allowing him to lead and guide me?
Uh-huh.
Right. It's a really dangerous place, but a lot of us try to put God, you know, we've talked about this, put God in a box.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and we see that attitude throughout Scripture, too.
Yeah.
Like, take David in the Psalms, for example.
Yeah.
I talked on this a couple Sundays ago,
mm-hmm.
or, I don't know, 4 or 5 Sundays ago. For those who don't know, my last, like, month has been a blur.
Yeah.
But
I actually think it was, like, 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It was, like, a month. It's just been a blur. But there's times in the Psalms where David is like, Lord, if you do this, then I will praise you. And you're like, and because all these bad things are happening to me, so if you do this, I'll praise you.
Yeah.
And there's times where we're like, okay, we're going to try to put conditions on our praise.
Yeah.
And I'm just here to say that's not who we're called to be.
Right.
Right? Like, we're called to be people who even when we're in good places, we're in bad places,
mm-hmm.
we're in good spirits, we're in bad spirits. We are here praising God through it all.
Right.
And striving to be in relationship with him through it all.
Yeah. So, by the way, the flip side of that is that doesn't mean you can think whatever you want and don't try to, no, that's not it either. Mm-hmm. The thing is, we're trying to identify what does God want us to do? Who is, yeah. what is Jesus teaching us to do? And how do we walk in faithfulness with that? The stone that the builders rejected has actually become the cornerstone, yeah. right? Reminding ourselves in this psalm, it says, man, it's better to take refuge in God than with people. It's better to take refuge with God than with princes. Mm-hmm. It's better to take refuge with God, for his love endures forever. Mm-hmm. Coming back to this Isaiah imagery, he's going to come after us with faithfulness, with hesed, which is the word that they use for love. Yeah. Steadfast love.
Yeah.
He's going to come after us over and over and abundantly. Be ready to course correct.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Be ready to course correct. It's okay. Like, it's okay to course correct. Mm-hmm. When you realize you're doing a dumb thing,
yep.
it's best to stop doing a dumb thing
yep.
and course correct. Like, that's part of Christian life. Mm-hmm. So like we said at the beginning of the episode, we figured we probably would not make it through all of our things. So this is going to be part one of two of Jesus speaking truth to power, mm-hmm. To leadership, reminding them of who they're called to be. Mm-hmm. So next week we're going to be talking about, they're going to have questions about the resurrection. They're going to have questions about his authority. They're going to have some other questions. We're going to dive into those and then continue in the narrative of Jesus's life.
Sounds good.
Until next time. And that's a wrap for today's episode of Love and Context. We hope this conversation encouraged you and gave you fresh insights into how we can better love God and others through the powerful truths of the Bible. We'd love to hear from you. Send your questions, thoughts, or suggestions to loveandcontext@gmail.com. Your feedback means the world to us and helps shape future episodes. Stay connected with us on social media for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and additional resources. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook at Love and Context. Be sure to hit that follow button and join our growing community. Thanks for being part of the Love and Context family. Remember, love is at the heart of it all. Until next time, keep seeking wisdom, embracing love, and living out your faith in today's world.